Welcome to the UDIA Queensland's Development DROM podcast, where we speak to members and ask them to share some property industry insights and at the same time get to know our industry colleagues a little better. My guest today is Jack Hutchinson, Director of Hutchinson's Builders. Jack is a qualified quantity surveyor and a licensed builder. He holds an MBA from London Business School and a Bachelor of Property from Bond University. Before being appointed as a director in 2022, Jack worked across various project and operational roles within Hutchies, as well as within other property construction and financial firms in both Australia and the United Kingdom. In his spare time, Jack writes fiction and has had several pieces published in Australian literary magazines. He's also a happily retired competitive pinball player, having once been ranked 7th in the country. Thanks for joining us on the Development DROM, Jack. So Jack, I'm sure you get this question quite a bit. Was working the family business always the plan?
Not quite always. I was offered it from a young age, yes. But in high school I wasn't too interested, to be honest. I had a bit of a rebellious streak and I was more interested in socializing and going out to high school parties and whatnot. But I still, even without study, ended up doing construction management at Bond and quantity surveying.
Yes.
And it wasn't really, though, until I was about 18 and worked in our modular facility and scaffold yard that I got a feel for, just on uni holidays. But I got a feel for the company and the values and the people. And, people had been there the whole lives and then went to the Christmas parties. And then I really thought, okay, this is a good thing to be a part of. And So from about 18, I really dedicated myself to the path of Hutchies. But before then, I was kind of ambivalent or rebellious towards it.
Deliberately heading in a different path.
Normal teenage kind of attitude. I don't want to do what my father does.
Yes.
And then saw, actually, this is quite a good thing to do.
It's quite cool. Yes. I had a moment with my daughter this morning who said, I give really good netball tips. And my comment to her was, I might know something about that. So I think this is something we all go through at some stage, isn't it?
Yeah.
So if you work with Hutchies, what would you be doing? Pinball? Can I shoot?
In this life, probably quantity surveying. That was my profession. So did the degree, then worked at Slattery in Sydney, so client side quantity surveying, and really enjoyed that. So that was always big on go do your own profession.
Yes.
Get your own self-confidence outside of the business, then come talk to me.
Yep.
So that's what I did, and I really enjoyed it. Fast pace, pre-contract stuff, cost planning for developers, and then post-contract assessing progress claims of builders. And it was quite a varied role in the development industry.
Yes.
So probably that. I also did a bit of non-bank lending financier stuff during my MBA and with Wingate, and really enjoyed that too. But in a totally alternate life, I'd love to write. But in this life, probably banking or quantity surveying.
Yeah. So writing, is that the escape route?
I think it's just a hobby. It's a fairly recent passion. I always wrote journals as a kid.
Yes.
But then, started writing some poetry and short fiction the last 5 years and have enjoyed it. Send some to magazines. Some stuff gets picked up.
Excellent.
I would love to do that, but obviously there's no money in it unless you're J.K. Rowling or Stephen King.
That's
right. It's a pretty steep distribution unless you're at the very top making hundreds of millions. Most writers are earning nothing.
Yeah. And tell me about the pinball thing. Like, I'm really curious. Sure. So how did that come about? So obviously started off playing pinball. Mm. What I sort of really underestimated was the competitive side of pinballing and the fact that there's some rankings.
Yeah. It's a real subculture.
Yes.
I guess it started because we had them around the house growing up.
Okay.
Dad was a pinball hobbyist. But I, growing up in the console era of games, I wasn't really too interested. But then when I was living in Sydney in my early 20s, I started going to pubs in Newtown and there were some pinballs there. Probably because I was used to them as a kid, I started playing in pubs. And then I was playing in a pub in Newtown and a guy came up and said, oh, you're pretty good. You should join our club. And I said, what do you mean club? He said, we meet here once a month. So I said, okay, went, and everyone was pretty good fun.
Yeah.
And then they said, oh, you should play some IFPA endorsed tournaments.
Wow.
I said, what's that? And they said, oh, the International Flipper Pinball Association.
Right.
And essentially they're the governing body that assigns ranking points to tournaments.
It's incredible.
And then my competitive streak came out and I started playing more tournaments and climbing the rankings. And at my peak, got to number 7 in Australia. But I've kind of retired. Haven't really played tournaments in 5 or 6 years,
yeah,
other than one or two here or there, but yeah, pretty much retired.
And so what does preparation for a pinball tournament look like, Jack? Is that, you know, are you downing a Powerade and sort of doing some stretches?
No, mostly beer.
Yeah.
It's very much a pub sport.
Yeah.
But, yeah, as far as getting better, it's just knowing all the different games. There's a lot of games produced over a lot of years.
Right.
And, yeah, then there's flipper skills. There's nudging the machine. There's, right, yeah, various techniques. Yes. Yeah, on the actual day, no, you drink beer.
Right. I get no Powerade needed. No.
Maybe a water in between beers.
So as you've obviously moved through the business, Jack, mm-hmm, you know, started as a contract administrator, I think.
Yeah, cost planner first, then CA on projects, but yeah, cost planner first.
So on that way through and moving through that journey, what are some of the experiences that you've had that have really shaped how you've and sort of the new things that you've brought to the business in your role as director?
Yeah, I think cost planning in John Belise's team was just great experience, the biggest builder in Queensland, essentially. So John does most of our high-rise work from, you know, Sky Tower, a 90-story building I was cost planning back in 2013 or 14. So you're working on big projects with a great team, guys like Marty Tanner, Dave Bendel, who, former GRC quantity surveyors, and then came over to Hutchies 20 years ago now, I think, nearly. Okay. I think, yeah, nearly that long. So it was learning from really good people working on big projects. So that was great experience after the Slattery days. And then had the opportunity to contract administrate a job that I priced as a cost planner, which was great experience too. So you're following your own budgets through to managing the build and letting contracts. And yeah, so that was all great experience. And then went to London and did an MBA and worked outside again, worked for a builder over in England called Waits. And so by the time I got back, Dad sort of said, I don't want you on projects anymore. I want you to do more of my stuff. So public-facing stuff, board meetings, budget meetings, more of a central control role.
Yeah,
I think my time as a CA or cost planner just gives me an understanding of the core of the business, I guess. They're pretty core roles all across the business. So I think if I'd skipped that, I'd just have a far inferior understanding of the business.
Yeah. And your time working for a UK builder, how was that? Are they very similar industries comparing that to what we have in Australia or?
Yeah, it was fantastic. Firstly, it was a lot of fun. I was on a project in London Bridge called Borough Yard. So right in the thick of London. It's interesting there. There's a few differences. It's a far more varied non-unionized labor force. So, you know, there's a lot of Eastern European labor.
Yes, of course.
So the cost of labor is not as severe.
Okay.
So it's a bit more of the Wild West from a labor point of view.
Yeah. Bit more connected too
into Europe. I don't know. This was during while Brexit was being negotiated, so it might be different now.
Yes.
So that was one observation, that it was easier to get labour and labour was cheaper.
Yes.
The contracting model's pretty similar. So there's a lot of essentially subcontracted in the same way we do. It's not as if commercial builders are self-performing trades.
Okay.
Probably a bit more forgiving on the head contract end.
Yes.
A few more cost-plus style arrangement or managing contractor style arrangements, as opposed to, I think Australia's had the hardest D&C, all the risk on the builder kind of contracts compared to other contemporaries across the world.
Okay.
That's changing a bit now.
Yes.
Because, you know, so many builders have gone bust that
it's
had to change. But yeah, in some ways it was similar. In some ways it was different. I think Australian professionals are very good. A lot of, whether you're a valuer or a town planner or a project manager, a lot of Australians who go to England from our industry do very well because they're hardworking, smart people.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And the modular stuff over there, Jack, was that emerging at the time or was it prevalent?
Yes and no. They had similar technologies to us. So they used some bathroom pods on some high-rise projects, which we have done here.
Yep.
There were some more modularized components. They had modular balconies, residential jobs.
Right.
So there were some different techniques. And then, again, modular demountables for schools, workers' accommodation, remote and regional hospitals, which, you know, we've done here and still do here.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but it's not as if they were building whole towers completely prefabricated.
But
it was part of the discourse like it is here that to ensure quality and to have more predictability of schedules and to build more housing, we should be doing more modular. It was certainly part of the conversation in the industry there.
And sort of putting, you know, giving you a crystal ball, which we'd all love at the moment, that conversation around modular and modular components has really re-emerged, I think, since we've really admitted and realised that we're in a housing crisis. In your view, where are we going to land on that? So it seems to me that the industry is using different modular components, sort of horses for courses. As you say, regional and remote locations, definitely a use there. Where do you think it's going, Jack, in Australia?
I think it will become more prevalent again in the social housing, remote and regional space.
Yep.
We already do a fair bit of that work, but obviously the state government and federal government are quite committed to investing in social housing now.
Yes.
And it's just difficult to get the labour in those regions. Yep. So modular does make sense.
Yeah.
It is still difficult to make stack up in the city as far as costs. And there's also, I guess, some architectural limitations as to the shape of buildings. There's no limit to the quality of finishes. You can have absolutely beautiful modular finishes, but if you have a curved building and things like that, I think it makes it less feasible to do modular.
Yes.
But I think it's a fantastic, fast way to deliver things when you need them quick. So at the moment, we're doing a lot for Queensland Health, remote and regional hospitals. We do a lot for the Department of Education.
Yeah.
And that's really timeline. That's when time is of the essence and a school needs a classroom for next term, and we can do it quite fast out of our facility in Yatala.
Yeah.
We have another modular facility in Toowoomba and now one in Newcastle in New South Wales. So I think it will grow, but I think we're a long way off building high-rises in the city out of modular. I think for whatever reason of detail, which is a whole other conversation, but it's just not cheaper in the cities for high-rise apartments yet.
Yeah, we've obviously been watching the global scene. We follow Katerra for some time in terms of their journey, and it seems that at that scale, companies like that still suffer the same headwinds that a builder delivering a stock standard residential building would suffer in terms of labour force, skills, ups and downs, and managing through economic cycles. So,
yeah, I think where some of the modular pains come from is companies have overinvested in factories and facilities, and then when the work dries up, they struggle to service whatever debt they took out to.
Yes.
But for us, the modular facility's really been a profit center of the builders of the business, especially the past 3 years when we've had the worst weather.
Yes.
We've had really low productivity on sites. We're building much slower.
Yeah.
Our modular facility's been certain and it hasn't suffered those same losses in productivity.
Yeah.
We're less exposed to the weather. We build under a roof.
Yeah. No rain in sheds, Jack, I hear.
Yeah, there are. Yeah, although like in our facilities, there are still some outdoor components, but you can move them around to bring stuff underneath.
Yeah.
So yeah, for us, modular has been a blessing. It's been a great part of the business.
Yeah. It's just where it goes through from here, I imagine.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's obviously been a challenging few years and those challenges, many of those still remain in the sector. And builders have been very much the coalface of that. What's your outlook for Queensland over the next couple of years? Again, that crystal ball, Jack. Mm.
Yeah, I think because it's very hard to make residential deals work at the moment, as any private developer will tell you, just because build costs are so high and sales revenues haven't quite kept up with build cost inflation. So residential projects will calm down, which should leave some capacity in the industry and I guess take the pressure off that inflation or escalation issue we've had. Global supply chains are a bit better. So before the Houthis or whatever were doing what they're doing, shipping had come right down again.
Okay.
The cost of steel had eased. The cost of concrete supply had eased.
Yeah.
So that's all positive as far as build costs leveling off. But the issue we have now is productivity on site.
Mm.
We're building slower.
Yeah.
We've still got a big state government spend to do. Maybe some of those projects won't happen. But assuming everything does happen, that will still soak up a lot of the top tier labour.
Yes.
And unfortunately, we still have a lot of insolvency to wash through the industry.
Yep.
So, unfortunately, we still have a lot of subcontractors who are still doing it tough from the past 3 years, and not all of them will make it through.
Yeah.
And every time a subcontractor goes broke on a builder, it's a big cost to the builder and builders are pricing that into future jobs.
Of course.
Yeah, I don't see building costs coming off on account of we're building slower, and there's still a lot of insolvency to wash through.
Yeah. There's no silver lining just yet on the horizon, is there?
It's still quite
hard yards.
It's still quite volatile and unclear is the reality.
You talked before about shortage of skills, competition for skills and labour, very much given some of the state government's commitments, and Queensland is not unique there. Victoria and New South Wales have similar sort of big builds going on. In terms of particularly thinking about Queensland, what do we need to be doing to keep and encourage more people about, you know, sort of taking up that trade or job in construction? What do we need to be doing as an industry?
Yeah, it's a major issue and a big question. I think a lot of it's cultural. I think, I'm a millennial in my early 30s, and unless you were struggling at school, at least where I went to school, you were encouraged to go to uni.
Even if
you had no idea what you wanted to do, even if you were really good in manual arts or practical classes.
That was never an issue for me, Jack.
I'm a paper pusher. I was never good at manual arts. Fortunately, found my space in the commercial world. But I think there's been, and also from parents, I think for whatever reason, parents of the baby boomer generation have told their kids, go to uni no matter what.
The sign of success, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And even though the pay is fantastic in construction, especially at the top end, you know, on big projects, a lot of the time they're earning more than the office staff on a project.
Yes.
So I don't think it's pay. I think it's culture. And I think the other thing we need to sell as an industry or as a Construction Skills Queensland and these bodies who do good work is that doing a trade is not the end of your career. If you have a brain on you, you can do your trade, learn how to build, learn your craft, and then either start your own business or go into project management at a builder. A lot of our team leaders are former carpenters. We have a former roofer. Greg Quinn, our former managing director, was a carpenter by trade.
Yes.
So it's a fantastic starting point to build a career in management anyway.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, we have more people retiring than entering the industry.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem. We need to somehow sell tradespeople as a desirable career.
Yes, absolutely. I do offer my services whenever I see you as a tiler or a bricklayer, but I've had no offers yet, Jack. It's probably tied back to my failure as in manual arts at school, but I was, you know, just one person, but I was still there.
Me too, don't
worry. As you've obviously taken on more responsibility in the business, what's keeping you awake at night apart from a young child?
Yeah, a 9-month-old baby is the main thing. I try to turn off from work and sleep okay generally.
Yeah.
But biggest headaches at the moment is this productivity issue.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's not just our industry. It's a big shock, like a pandemic inevitably changes attitudes. And I think it's changed people's attitudes to work as perhaps work not being the be all and end all. When you stop work for a bit and then you restart, it's hard to get that same momentum back in your work. For self-motivated people, they probably work the same as they did pre-COVID. But I think for a lot of people, COVID did some damage to work ethics. Careful with my words, because I'm grateful for tradies work a lot harder than me. So I'd never be critical of their work ethic. But for whatever reason, we are building slower.
Yes.
So that's my biggest headache at the moment is we're taking longer to build. And when we take longer to build, all the costs keep ticking. The cranes, the scaffold, all our salaried staff. So that's the biggest issue at the moment is I'm more stressed about that than future work. I think the economy will fix itself in time and future work will come, and we have plenty of state government work now, which we historically been a private developers builder, but now government work's probably 30% of our book, which is
significant.
Which is fantastic. Yeah, and we're enjoying that work as well as working for our loyal private developer clients too. It's not as if we've left that world. It's a diversified, balanced workbook.
Yeah.
But what's keeping me up is probably this productivity issue and the fact that we're building slower.
And the trend of that too, Jack, isn't it? It doesn't seem like a flash in the pan. It's some fairly deep and systemic.
Yeah, I think. I think it's emerging. Again, I think it's cultural or psychological. Mm. I think obviously unemployment is low, so there's not a whole lot of, and building sites need every person, so there's not a whole lot of pressure. Maybe if the economy changes, attitudes towards work might change. Yeah, for whatever reason, we're just not getting that speed and that momentum we used to have on sites. There's also been terrible weather too, and a lot of other things other than COVID that have interrupted progress. So we just haven't had a good run.
Yeah.
But the trend isn't reversing yet.
No.
I'm sure it will eventually. But at the moment, what that means is when we're pricing new jobs, developers are seeing our programs and saying, why is it 6 months longer than it was previously? And we're just saying, sorry, guys, we can't take the risk on the fact that we're going to be building as quick as we were in 2019, which is a sorry state of affairs, but there's only so much we can control.
Yeah, and it does seem that there is still some shifting happening, but not the right way either, Jack. It seems that those programs are getting slightly and slightly longer on live jobs that are underway.
And look, there's always exceptions. We have some sites that are steaming ahead, and every site's got its own culture, its own people. So it's not as if every job is slow, but across the board, it's much slower.
Yeah, it's the average trend. Yeah. Mm. You've talked before about the organisational culture at Hutchies. What's your role in keeping that alive?
It's varied. I think, yeah, the culture probably stems from my father and his fun personality. So there were always fun Christmas parties. Like we celebrated Guy Fawkes Night with fireworks.
Amazing.
And some people probably think it's a looser culture than it is. It's still a very hardworking culture.
Yeah.
And it's still respectful to all individuals, but it's always had that sense of humor.
Yes.
And that sense of bringing yourself to work. And yeah, so I think my role in keeping it is firstly to go to all the social functions, to get to know people.
That's a big commitment, Jack. I remember seeing you in Christmas party season and you were...
a bad place.
Well, yeah, I was amazed, to be honest. Like the amount of functions that you were having to get through and you were still very chirpy. You were in a good spot.
Well, thank you. Yeah, November, December's hard because we have about, including support teams, we have 30-odd teams.
Goodness.
And they all have their own parties all across the country. So
what a commitment from you though,
but
Jack.
Some clash on the same night, so you can't do everyone.
Yeah.
But I enjoy it too. I like talking to Hutchies people. I like having a drink with Hutchies people.
Yeah.
So that's part of it. And then the other is in the office, maintaining pleasant disposition and interactions with people, behaving as if the culture you want to create. So having that work ethic and that seriousness, but also a sense of humour and a sense of kindness and fun, I guess.
Which is quite a feat given the size of the organisation, I think. I think we always talk about culture and almost culture within teams, within an organisation. But the thing that strikes me about Hutchies is it's a very consistent theme across the organisation, which, as I say, given its size, is impressive.
Yeah. I mean, teams do have their own microcultures, of course, and even sites have their own culture. All culture is people behaving in groups, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree. There is quite a consistent Hutchies identity and culture that runs through the place.
Yeah.
And yeah, it does change as you grow to a point. Like, I'm sure it was much looser in the 90s.
I think everything was much looser in the 90s,
Jack. That's true of society.
Yeah.
Probably the other thing is we are fortunate in that we are totally owned by the family. So we don't have any outside shareholders. We're not publicly listed.
Yes.
We don't have industrial super funds telling us, these are the values you need because that's what the people who give us money are saying. So we don't have all these outside forces. We can have our own identity within reason, obviously, because we still need to build for clients who have values that we need to align with, whether it's diversity, inclusion, and a lot of those values are in line with us.
Yeah.
Anyway, we don't exist totally on an island, but we do have less external pressure than most. Most builders or property firms have a broad range of funding, shareholders, stakeholders, where perhaps that makes their culture a bit more cautious because they don't want to get in trouble.
Yes, absolutely. Well, stay free.
Yes. As free as we can
be. That's it.
Within reason.
That's it. Jack, what's your focus for 2024? Personal and professional.
Yeah, okay. professionally, you know, there's only so much the directors and people in the office can do, but I would love to see sites humming again and moving quickly. And, because when sites are humming, that leads to profitability and it really just changes the mood of the industry. You're happy when you're making money, as sad as it is. And losing money is difficult because you need to make money to keep things going.
Yeah. So
we've been fortunate to have enough profitable work that we're in the black, but it's not where it should be for a business of our size. So, and then as far as future workbook this year, it's just pricing in.
Yeah.
The reality of what we're dealing with now, as shocking as it is to our clients, we can't take the risk on it. So pricing that in, pushing back on some contract terms where perhaps we have wore the brunt of it. And again, all in fairness with financiers, with developers, so that we get an outcome where a deal can go ahead.
Yes.
Yeah, so that's professionally is building quicker and pricing sensibly and building a future workbook that's more risk averse, I guess.
Yes.
Personally, try to be a good father, I guess. Yeah, be home, make time for my daughter, try to be pleasant around the house. Go to the park more, all those things at home. And then, you know, maybe the odd pinball tournament. And then, writing fiction in the evenings as well.
It sounds like you've got a bit going on,
Jack. Yeah, well, we all do.
But it sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jack. It's been wonderful to chat to you really appreciate your time in what is a very busy time, not only for Hutchies, but also for you. But it's been fantastic to chat. We certainly really appreciate all the support that Hutchies lends to UDIA. It's of great assistance with our advocacy and also our organisation. So thank you.
No, thank you, Kirsty. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the UDIA Queensland's Development Drum podcast. It's been an absolute pleasure having you with us. Remember to rate and review this show on your favourite podcast app. While you're there, please make sure you click subscribe so you don't miss an episode.